This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. You know that feeling when you have something that's really been bothering you, or when you've been fixating on something in your life that's looming large in your mind? We all carry around different stressors in our lives, big and small, and I think we inherently know that when we keep them bottled up inside, it can start to affect us negatively. Therapy is a safe space to get things off your chest, and to figure out how to work through whatever it is that's weighing you down. Therapy isn't just for people who have experienced major trauma. There are plenty of benefits it can have for everyone. It's helpful for learning positive coping skills and how to set boundaries. And don't underestimate the power of boundaries either. Those are super important. If you've been wondering if you should give therapy a try, check out BetterHelp. It's a fully online experience and designed from the ground up to be convenient and customizable to your schedule. To get started, you just have to fill out a brief questionnaire that will match you up with a licensed therapist, and you can switch therapists at any time for no extra charge. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/filmdaily today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/filmdaily.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Slash Film Daily for June 6th, 2018. This is Slash Film Editor-in-Chief Peter Sarda, and joining me today is Weekend Editor Brad Oman.
Hey, that's me.
And writers Y Tran Bui.
Hey, everyone.
And Chris Evangelista.
Hi.
Today we're going to talk about film and TV news. Let's just get into it. And that includes some trailer reactions and early buzz of some of the summer's most anticipated films. But we'll start off with the news, and that is Lord of the Rings. We've been talking about this Lord of the Rings TV series that Amazon has been working on. Originally, we heard that Peter Jackson might be involved, but it seems like that is not the case at all. Brad, what do we know?
Yeah, a little while back, there was a word going around that Peter Jackson was in the midst of considering either being involved with Amazon's Lord of the Rings TV series, which is supposed to take place before the events of Fellowship of the Ring, or that he was considering tackling some kind of DC Comics movie. But apparently, in a recent interview with the French entertainment outlet Allociné, they asked him about both prospects, and he denied both of them. He said, I'm not involved at all in the Lord of the Rings series. I understand how my name could come up, but there's nothing happening with me on this project. And then when they asked about any potential DC Comics title he was working on, he says, that's not true. I had no discussions about that. I'm not a fan of comics. I've never read any, so I'm not particularly interested in adapting one for cinema. That's not true at all. So, bummers for anybody who is looking forward to Peter Jackson heading back to Middle Earth or developing his first comic book movie. Or at least a superhero comic book movie, since The Adventures of Tintin is essentially a comic book adaptation.
Now, I'm not the biggest Lord of the Rings fan here. I'm probably the least fan of Lord of the Rings probably on this podcast. But to me, this news is good because, you know, we've seen six films of Peter Jackson doing Lord of the Rings. I want to see a different vision. I don't want it to look like what we've seen before. I want, I want them to build a different version of this world, not just, you know, recreation what we've seen in those movies. Brad, do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, that's pretty much how I feel, too. You know, Peter Jackson did an amazing job with the original Lord of the Rings trilogy. It's one of my favorite film series of all time. But The Hobbit is almost on the opposite end of the spectrum. I really didn't like any of the movies. I thought it was too drawn out, and it really felt like Peter Jackson was just treading water, and he had really, you know, diminished his returns with those movies. And so having him not come back, I think, is great. I would rather see somebody else tackle it. I'd rather see, like you said, a different style. And plus, I would rather just see Peter Jackson tackle other projects. You know, he spent so many years of his life on those six movies, and it's just, I would like to see him do, you know, more stuff like King Kong, or, you know, maybe hopefully direct the next Tintin movie, which they keep saying is coming at some point.
Yeah, and much like George Lucas, it was like diminishing returns for the last three. So, let's move on to other news. This is for Avengers 4. I think by now probably everybody has seen Avengers Infinity War, but we'll still tread lightly here. Chris Hemsworth, who plays Thor in the Marvel movies, is saying that Avengers 4 will be even more shocking than Infinity War, which had probably one of the most shocking endings of all time. HT, how can this possibly be?
Well, that's the question, isn't it? But Hemsworth is hyping up the next Avengers movie about a year before it will come out. So start your clocks, essentially. This is where we will just continue to see more news reports about how crazy and how big this movie will be. But he said to Esquire, quote, "If you are shocked by Infinity War, I think the second one is even more shocking for other reasons entirely. That's what kind of blew me away the first time I read both scripts, is how they managed to orchestrate so many different characters, but give them each their own separate shots and moments, and have it be elevated and feel fresh and unique, not just like a messy thrown together assembly of these guys," end quote. So he says for other reasons entirely, so it may not be a surprising fate of some characters, to put it in a non-spoilery term, but perhaps some other twists or plot development. It's still very vague for now, but I am kind of surprised that Marvel is allowing Chris Hemsworth to kind of run his mouth in this way, because they're so strict with these kind of plot spoilers, although it's just kind of a general vibe of what Avengers 4 will be like rather than what actually will happen.
I was talking to a friend the other day about Avengers 4, and we still don't even know who the villain is going to be. Is, like, Thanos still going to be the villain in Avengers 4? Does anybody have any ideas of what Avengers 4, who the bad guy could possibly be?
RoboCop.
Nope. I always assumed it would still be Thanos, just because, you know, Infinity War was originally split between 3 and 4, and this is still kind of the second part of Thanos' story in a way. So I assumed it would be the same, but with maybe more time travel or sci-fi twist added to it. I'm not really sure.
Well, we will find out more as the next year progresses. But let's go to the other side of the spectrum, from Marvel to DC. Warner Brothers is working on a Joker movie with Joaquin Phoenix and Todd Phillips. We've talked about that in the past. But yesterday afternoon, we learned that Warner Brothers is also apparently developing a Jared Leto Joker standalone movie. Chris, why is this happening to us?
I don't know. Maybe because life is bad and we're all being punished. But yeah, so
wow, that was the actual reaction that I had to this story.
It was a very shocking moment when this news broke, because I feel like we had all sort of moved on from Suicide Squad, and I honestly thought that Warner Brothers had also moved on from Suicide Squad, but apparently not. Yeah, so they're giving Jared Leto his own standalone Joker movie. He's executive producing it, but this isn't going to stop the other standalone Joker movie that Todd Phillips is directing, with Martin Scorsese producing and Joaquin Phoenix apparently starring in. I mean, there's nothing official on that yet, but that's the rumor. What DC is and Warner Brothers are doing now, they're going to have two separate sort of cinematic universes, I guess, where one is the, you know, the current DCEU as we know it, and that's going to include this new Joker movie and the Harley Quinn movie they're developing and Aquaman and that stuff. And then there's going to be this other banner called the New Origins banner, which is like a completely different timeline that lets other actors play the same characters with stories that aren't connected. And on one level, I think that's kind of neat, because that's so different than, you know, obviously what Marvel is doing. On another level, I just imagine that becoming very confusing and strange. And the bottom line is, I don't know why they're doing this Joker movie with Jared Leto, because I can't imagine anyone other than Jared Leto is excited about this. I don't think anyone was overly impressed with his work in Suicide Squad. I mean, you know, to give him the benefit of the doubt, a lot of his scenes got cut. I mean, he shot a lot more scenes for the film that didn't end up in the final movie. But again, I can't imagine anyone is clamoring for this, but it's apparently happening.
Okay, so is anyone here remotely excited for the possibility of a Jared Leto Joker movie? Cue silence. That's what I thought. Okay, let's move on.
I bet there's a bunch of dudes wearing Affliction t-shirts who are super excited.
We'll have to talk about this tomorrow, Brad. It's tomorrow on the podcast. Okay. Let's move on to some early buzz. You know, summer is really heating up now, and the studios are screening, you know, the films that are coming out in midsummer. And they did so yesterday. They screened Jurassic World and The Incredibles 2. I was at both screenings in L.A. Jurassic World, before we go to some of the early buzz, I'll give you my quick reaction, which I gave on Twitter. And it is, well, first of all, let me say that I really, really like the original Jurassic World a lot. I think it's the second best Jurassic Park movie by far. I like it more than most people. Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom, I think, is a better shot movie. I think the first half of that movie is so good and so much better than Jurassic World. The second half kind of falls for me. And without getting into specifics, the ending is just dumb. But the movie as a whole is, I think, worth seeing. There's a lot of cool action. There's like one action sequence that's done kind of like presented in one single shot, which is clever and interesting. And I kind of love that there's, you know, some kind of interesting theme going on here with, you know, what is our responsibility after, you know, creating these things, almost, I guess, almost Westworld-esque. Brad, you did a roundup for the site of what people thought. What did the first critics who saw this film think of Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom?
The reviews have mostly fallen one way or the other on an extreme level. The people who didn't like this movie really didn't like it. I saw several people even say they hate it, call it extremely stupid. But then there are some other people who kind of went along for the ride, accepted that this movie was going to be relatively ridiculous and have featured dumb characters making poor decisions and dinosaurs being action heroes, and they accepted it. So it's, there's not really a lot of middle ground here. The one thing that was a common thread, even though on the negative reviews, is that J.A. Bayona did bring some of his signature style and suspense to the franchise, but it just really wasn't enough to make the movie as a whole better for them. But it does seem like he really did bring his own touch to this movie, and apparently there are some moments that feel like they have the same wonder and intensity as the original Jurassic Park, but nothing that's really quite as magical as that first experience with the original Jurassic Park.
Yeah, I think people that are waiting for Jurassic Park or Jurassic World movie to reach the level of Jurassic Park, which is one of the best movies of all time, should stop waiting. I mean, that's just not going to happen. I would also say that, you know, I'm one of those people that I'm not a spoiler phobe. I often tell people, you know, watch trailers, enjoy trailers. The trailers for Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom do feature a lot of imagery from the last 10 minutes of the movie, and I do think are quite spoilers. And maybe knowing that's a spoiler, I don't know. So I would say stay away from TV spots, stay away from trailers until you see the movie if you're excited to see this. I did want to mention a story that happened. I saw this at AMC Theaters in Century City at 10 a.m. at a 10 a.m. screening. They did screenings throughout the day. I wasn't at this screening at noon, but Jim from IGN was, and he posted about this on his Facebook, and I wanted to share the story with you guys. I'm not sure if you saw my tweet about this, but he said, I had to exit Jurassic World 2 close to the end of the movie because there was a horrible medical emergency in the theater. Someone was having a seizure, but because the fucking booth is automated, then people screaming at the projectionist to turn on the house lights didn't work because there was no one there. And everyone was made to lock their phones up in bags like they were at a premiere, so no one could call 911 or provide any lights from their phones. The dude wasn't responded by the time there were lights and the theater was cleared. This place, the reps and security were all completely unprepared for this emergency. But hey, no one pirated a movie that is already out in theaters overseas. So I don't know. This is a horrifying story because this is like my worst fear is like, you know, having a heart attack in a movie theater and no one noticing. until the lights go on, or like, you know, going to a haunted house and somehow dying horrifically, and like, you know, no one notices until the end of the night that you're not just a prop in the haunted house. But it's
such a that's such a specific fear. Is that is that really one of your
fears? It is a fear. I don't know why, but it's something I've often thought about. Maybe because I spent so much of my life in movie theaters, and
my fear is falling down the stairs and accidentally impaling my eye.
I mean, okay, Chris, I have bigger fears than this, but that is one of my fears.
My biggest fear is dropping a knife and it landing right in my foot.
That's a big sitcom trope. I can see that being a fear.
Yeah, I know. I'm afraid of anything puncturing anything.
Is it really a big sitcom trope?
Well, I just know it from like Friends, for example. I'm pretty sure it's not that common, but I just watch Friends a lot, so.
Yeah. I don't know. I just wanted to bring up the story because I thought it was interesting. A lot of these premieres and stuff, they have. I know you guys aren't in Hollywood. I'm not sure if they do this in New York. Chris, maybe you could tell me. But they have us put our phones in these like locked bags that can't be opened until you exit the theater. Like there's a security guy.
It's not every screening, but anytime I go to like a big screening, like a Marvel screening or a Star Wars screening, they do. They either make us leave our phones or they say, don't even bring your phone. So I usually lock it in my car. Now that I told people this, someone's going to break into my car. Now they've heard this, but I usually lock it in my glove box because they give us advance warning, just because I feel weird leaving my phone with someone. It's a very weird thing. I don't want to do that.
I've had screenings that do that too, and usually they're big ones, but sometimes they're really arbitrary. Like one time I had them take our phones for The Glass Castle, which is not a big movie by any means, and that was very strange.
Man, they must really not trust you guys, because I saw Infinity War and Solo press screenings this year, and they didn't give a shit about our phones. We were allowed to take them in and use them, and they did not care.
Yeah, the weirdest thing is, you know, these are journalists that have relationships with these studios that if they, you know, took a photo or pirated any footage, their lives would be over and their careers would be over. So I just don't understand why movie studios don't trust, you know, these people that they, you know, they choose to invite to their screenings. We're not like some randos off the street.
I could understand if it was a combo press public screening, like when they do ticket giveaways for like an advanced screening.
Why don't you take their phones and like, you know?
Because you don't necessarily know who is who in the theater, and you're going to have like someone walking up to you and being like, if they see you like check the time on your phone or something, they're going to be like, excuse me, you know, like you need to leave or something like that. So it's better probably and easier to just have no one have their phone.
Not to get into specifics, but we usually have like a press section in our theater, and then the random, you know, radio giveaways like go in another section. Anyways, not to get into like, it's not about me feeling entitled and wanting to have my phone with me. It's just, I don't know. To me, it's horrifying that like I later heard that this guy is okay. People saw him being taken out eventually and being fine, or at least, you know, appearing to be conscious and stuff. I don't know. It's just horrifying that someone could die because, you know, studios didn't trust journalists to not pirate footage on screen. Is no one else appalled by this?
I'm appalled. It's horrible.
Okay.
I didn't want to say like, be silent, be like, no, this is all right. No, it's terrible.
Yeah. Okay. We'll move on. I just thought that was an interesting story. That was something that only probably happens in LA. Let's move on to Incredibles 2. That was a movie that screened last night and had its world premiere in Hollywood. I was at a screening. This is a film. Or the first film is one of my favorite Pixar movies of all time. Brad, I know it's one of yours as well. I should have been more excited going into this film than I was. Maybe it's been, the 14 years since the original has come out. It's kind of been a long wait, and the trailers don't kind of, you know, present it more of kind of like a fun family adventure and not something epic and big and exciting. I'm here to tell you that the movie is good, but yeah, it's not epic, big, or exciting. I'm not going to give away any spoilers for the film, but the villain in the film is dumb, just like Jurassic World. The villain is dumb, and I don't know. I enjoyed it. Jack-Jack and Edna steal the show. I want to see a short film with Jack-Jack being babysat by Edna Mode, and Giacchino's score is amazing. The production design is incredible. I want to live in that house. I want to see more of this team together, and I was kind of hoping after that first Incredibles film that we would see, you know, a more kind of like Fantastic Four-ish film where we get to see them together using their powers more. But as you can see from the setups and the trailers, that is not the case. You know, the family is kind of separated for most of the film. Brad, or wait, who did the roundup for this? HT.
I did.
Yeah. What do people think of Incredibles? I think I'm the only person that was kind of lukewarm on this.
Yeah, Peter, you were the only one who was lukewarm on this movie. Everyone else was basically over the moon for Incredibles 2. Some people even suggested it was better than the original, which was worlds away from your reaction.
Blasphemy. Blasphemy. There's no way this is better than the original. But okay, go on.
So the first reaction was from Jermaine Lussier, who used to work for Slash Film and now works for IO9. He said, Incredibles 2 is excellent, super funny, super smart, and the action is bigger and better than before. It shares some narrative DNA with the first film, but works nonetheless. Another Pixar winner. A few people said that this is the best Pixar movie, Pixar sequel yet. Or one of the best Pixar sequels yet. Apologies. And that... they also gave effusive praise for Michael Giacchino's score as well. And one person, Skylar Schuler, said Incredibles 2 is easily Pixar's best sequel since Toy Story 3, which is also high praise. So, yeah, a lot of excitement for this film. And no one's saying the same thing as you, Peter.
I don't know. I agree with a lot of these statements that you've read, except for the, you know, best sequel yet, which is insane because, you know, Toy Story 3 and Toy Story 2 are just like some of the best sequels of all time. And I don't know.
It's strange to me that you wanted something bigger and more epic when, like, The Incredibles, the first one, is all about, like, the focus on the family, and they just also
I wanted more of the family together, and I feel like, you know, I don't think I'm spoiling anything by saying, you know, the plot is Mrs. Incredible going off on her own and the family unit kind of being divided because, you know, it's Mr. Incredible has to take care of them. I don't know. I want to see them together on an adventure. Maybe not epic. Epic's probably the bad word for it, but I don't know. Also... It's kind of weird coming to a Pixar movie after all this time and not having kind of, you know, I expect Pixar movies to make me cry or to be very emotionally involved. And this is a fun adventure, but it's not that kind of Pixar film.
I mean, that was kind of the first film, too. It wasn't quite that emotionally involved either. It was just a fun romp, like a fun family romp. And that's fine as well.
Yeah. No. And don't get me wrong here. I'm not saying this movie is bad. This is a very good movie. I would give it like 7.5 out of 10. You know, that's a good movie. I just don't think, I don't know. I just don't think this is anywhere on the level of that first film. But maybe that first.
I can't believe you hate Incredibles 2, Peter. That's crazy.
Okay.
Peter's a hater.
Brad, let's move on to Hotel Artemis. The first buzz came online, and you did a roundup for the site. By the way, what is this film? Because this is not on the level of the two films we just mentioned, and what do people think of it?
Yeah, so this is a movie that feels like it might be set within the John Wick universe, but it is not. It follows a hotel that is set up as a sort of a haven for criminals to make an escape and get healed up when they're on the run from the law or from other criminals, what have you. It's run by Jodie Foster, who's sort of this old, disheveled, slightly rough around the edges nurse, and it features an ensemble cast of, you know, a collection that is very strange to see all together in a movie. Sterling K. Brown, Sophia Boutella, Jeff Goldblum, Jenny Slate, Zachary Quinto, Charlie Day, Dave Bautista, and then the danger and, you know, intrigue sort of escalates as the night goes on, because apparently something Sterling K. Brown has is something that Jeff Goldblum and his gang wants, and you're not supposed to kill each other or fight in the hotel, but they start breaking rules and all hell breaks loose. It's directed by Drew Pearce, who is the writer of Iron Man 3. He's making his directorial debut here. And it sounds like even though he makes quite a stylish and wild debut with this action movie, the movie never really comes together to be as good as it should have been or could have been. A lot of the reactions say that it kind of falls short, that it's less than the sum of some of its more imaginative parts. There's some cool action sequences, but it's not enough to make up for some of the missteps that it takes as far as the story is concerned. Some of the writing apparently is a bit schlocky. So a lot of the more positive things seem to indicate that there's potential and promise for Drew Pearce as a director, but just that this movie never really comes together as a whole to be quite as satisfying as you might hope it would be.
That's about where I thought it was gonna land. But let's move on to some trailers, because there's been some awesome trailers hitting this week. Because Jurassic World is coming out and Incredibles, so I think the trailers, are gearing up to be released on those films, and thus they're online a little bit early. First, let's talk about Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, which we had seen a teaser trailer of this before, which revealing Miles Morales as the new Spider-Man in this alternate Spider-Man universe. This trailer, I guess, shows us a little bit more of this alternate Spider-Man universe and actually kind of explains that it is this, you know, alternate dimension where other people are Spider-Man and other men and women are, you know, Spider-Men or Spider-Women or whatever you want to call them. I don't know. The art looks incredible. The animation style. I'm so in for this. Brad, what are your thoughts on this trailer?
I love the trailer. I think it's fantastic. The animation style alone is enough to get excited. It's such a refreshing new aesthetic that we're seeing. We haven't really seen animation like this on the big screen on this scale before. I love the feeling of Lord and Miller's signature, you know, humor in there, which is a little bit meta, obviously. I like the idea that this is expanding into a side of the Spider-Man universe that we haven't seen in a movie yet. I think it really is capturing the essence of a comic book movie in animated form, and I hope that this is a big enough hit and that people like it enough that we start to see more movies, comic book movies, take a cue from this and really pull some of the more fantastic, otherworldly side of comic books and adapt them into animated movies for stories that maybe might not work as well in a live action format.
I am so excited about it. It looks completely gorgeous, and I like the way that it plays with that sort of comic book format in that it has like text bubbles pop up, and it's really striking sort of graphic animation style that I'm not really sure what they use, but or like what kind of style they use, but it's very eye-catching, and I like it a lot. And but it's funny to me to hear Jake Johnson voice the original Spider-Man, because he has this really deadbeat sort of tone to him, and the fact that like Spider-Man looks like Cameron Frye from like Ferris Bueller is just hilarious to me as well. So but I like it. It's a really exciting trailer, and I'm excited to see this story and to also see the glimpse we get of Gwen Stacy as Spider-Gwen at the end as well.
Yeah, I think that was a little bit unexpected, a good pop at the end there. And Brad, I think you said it in the Slack channel or Slash Film Slack channel, but do you think that ending beat is to tease like the reveal of more characters at Comic-Con? Or is it just a joke?
No, I mean, I imagine it will. It might be a joke in the movie, because there is some other, you know, meta stuff in there. But I think that that's definitely a tease as to like Sony's going to bring something to Comic-Con where they're going to reveal just, you know, how many Spider-Verse characters will be in this movie.
I think it looks great. When it was first announced, I was sort of like the last thing we need is another Spider-Man movie. But this looks fantastic. I love the animation style because it doesn't really look like anything else. Like it's the movements and the way it's illustrated. I don't even know what I'd even call this kind of animation. It doesn't look like your standard animation.
It almost looks like it almost looks like cel shaded like video games, but that's not quite it either. I don't...
It also looks somewhat like rotoscoping in a way too.
Yeah,
but I'm not really sure. That. Yeah,
yeah. It doesn't like the way the characters move and like the coloring. I can't even explain it really, but it looks so different, and that alone has my interest like through the roof for this. I've gone from being apathetic to really wanting to see this.
It's so weird because I would traditionally feel like this many characters in a superhero film or even a Spider-Man film is probably a bad idea. But for some reason, I have faith in Lord and Miller, and this just looks interesting and exciting. I can't wait to see it. But let's talk about Transformers. They have released the trailer for Bumblebee, which is the new standalone origin story of Bumblebee. Let's just go quickly to you, HT. What did you think of the trailer for Bumblebee?
I was surprisingly charmed by the trailer. I got a kind of Amblin sort of vibe to it when I first watched it, and it has definitely a more family-friendly, nostalgic feel versus the aggressive sort of violent versions that we've had in the new in Michael Bay's Transformers. And I found myself charmed. I was excited, and I like Hailee Steinfeld a lot. I will watch most movies she's in, even if sometimes her track record is a little bit spotty. But I think that this version of Bumblebee 2 with his sort of like more rotund design that matches the Beetle that he shows up in is much more appealing to me.
I do like the roundness of this version of Bumblebee. I mean, I guess he's based on a VW bug. Let's go to Chris. Chris, what is your reaction to this trailer?
This I kind of hate myself because I really liked this trailer. I hate the Transformers films. They're across the board awful. They look bad. They're just big, loud, ugly monstrosities. But this looks so charming. I can't get over it. That initial reveal where Bumblebee is like cowering in the corner and Hailee Steinfeld. I know. And then she puts her hand on his face. I was like, I melted. I was like, I can't believe how good this looks. Screw you, Bumblebee, the movie. So I'm in. I've gone from having zero interest in this to saying, fine, I will see Bumblebee.
Brad, are you also now sold on Bumblebee?
Yeah, for sure. This honestly, it just feels like a Transformers reboot, and they're starting over from scratch, going back, in time to a little bit to the 80s for this movie. And I actually will defend the first Transformers movie because I think the first Transformers movie is fantastic, with the exception of some of Michael Bay's, less than desirable traits
jokes
in filmmaking.
Yeah,
yeah, his comedy is awful, and some of his lingering ogling shots of his hot female characters, well, air quotes, it's actually a really good movie that you can feel like Spielberg maybe had some input, and like you can see what he saw in this kind of story, and then after that the sequels just go into something ridiculous and pure Michael Bay. So this has that kind of spirit that I like about the first Transformers movie, and it actually looks like it has the potential to be even better, so I'm hoping for the best.
Yeah, I also am hoping for the best. I saw some of this footage at CinemaCon. They actually showed the full scene of her first meeting Bumblebee, which is like the crux of this trailer. Then they showed us a trailer which was more like a traditional Transformers trailer. I think they saw the reaction from that crowd at CinemaCon and put together this trailer, which is the majority of, that scene that everybody loved, and not as much of the trailer that people didn't like or didn't, respond as well to. I will say this. I had heard that the script for this isn't great. I know they had some test screenings that weren't so hot, but you never know with test screenings. They've had test screenings for Pixar movies that ended up being, some of our favorite movies of all time. So that's nothing to indicate of anything. I'm excited to see Travis Knight's debut live action film after coming off all the stuff he's done at Laika. And, I'm a big fan of what Hailee is doing. And I'm excited to see this. I'm interested to see if you know, I feel I'm much like you, Brad. I liked the first Transformers films, and as we went on, they got kind of progressively worse. And you know, I'm excited to be excited for a Transformers movie again. Was someone going to say something there? I'm sorry.
Oh, I was just thinking, like, wasn't there a scene in the first Transformers where Bumblebee pees on John Turturro?
I don't think it's Bumblebee that does it. I think it's one of the other Transformers. but yes, that he does dump whatever fluid is inside the car that probably isn't pee onto John Turturro.
Listen, I'm not saying the original Transformers is a masterpiece or anything.
That's one of the Michael Bay's stupid jokes. Then we just don't talk about it, okay?
Yes. Okay, let's move on to our last and final trailer, which we have to do quick, and that is for A Star Is Born, the Bradley Cooper and Lady Gaga film. Chris, what are your thoughts on this movie or this trailer?
This looks good. I don't know what I was thinking it would be beforehand. Like, I don't know. Maybe I just wasn't interested in it, but story-wise, it looks a little cliche, but that's sort of the Star Is Born story in general. It's just a cliche story, but it looks like Bradley Cooper knows what he's doing directing-wise, and I'm actually interested in seeing this.
Yeah, seeing this trailer first time at CinemaCon, I was surprised. You know, I've seen Lady Gaga in things like American Horror Story, but she's usually playing like a version of Lady Gaga, the character. And I think in this, we get to see her in a more vulnerable, we see the promise of a great performance there. Ichi, I know you were saying similar things in chat. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I was on the same boat as Chris. I didn't really know what to think of this movie. I heard that it was on its way, and it was kind of had like a troubled history. It was in the works since 2011 with Clint Eastwood originally set to direct, but then Bradley Cooper came on board, and it was meant to be released earlier, I think, but now we're seeing the first trailer. And yeah, I was surprised. I actually thought it was a really good trailer, and it didn't feel like just a shot-for-shot remake of the 1972 version.
1970s.
The one starring Barbara... Yeah. 1970s version starring Barbara Streisand and Kris Kristofferson. But I like that it had sort of like a country spin on it, and that Bradley Cooper was giving this nice, weary performance that will definitely, I think, get him in the Oscar buzz talk. And yeah, it looks like a great film, and I was impressed by Lady Gaga as well. I think I haven't seen her act a lot, but she gives a very vulnerable performance in the trailer that we saw. So I liked it.
Yeah, I think Lady Gaga looks like she's going to be an impressive actress. There's nothing about this trailer that like jumps out at me as like, oh my god, this is a must see. This looks incredible. You know, like Chris said, it does look like your average kind of musical biopic kind of flair. Like, I feel like there's some remnants of Country Strong and Crazy Heart in there mixed together. So it's, you know, it looks compelling enough. Like, I think what will really sell it will be the chemistry between Bradley Cooper and Lady Gaga, and, you know, hopefully the soundtrack will be something that is worth listening to as well. So not necessarily jumping out of my seat, you know, waiting to buy tickets for it, but I'll definitely check it out when it comes around.
Yeah, I'm kind of waiting to see if there's going to be some like Oscar buzz, or, you know, when the first screenings of this happen, if we're going to hear, you know, it is something special, because right now it looks like it has the potential to be something special, or it could just be a, you know, one of those biopics that you mentioned. But we'll have to wait and see. And the screenings will probably happen, in a couple months? That does it for today's edition of Slash Film Daily. Brad, where can people find more of your work online?
You can check me out on slashfilm.com. You can also find me on Twitter at Ethan_Anderton, and you can check out my podcast, Go Flix Yourself, on iTunes and other podcasting platforms.
You can find me on Twitter at htranbuy and every day at slashfilm.com.
Chris, if we need to find you and find your car in a parking garage outside a movie theater, where can we find you?
Don't do that, but you can find me at slashfilm.com, and I'm on Twitter at cevangelista413.
You can find me at slashfilm and on slashfilm.com. You can find all the stories we've talked about today in the show notes and linked on slashfilm.com. This podcast, Slash Film Daily, is published every weekday on iTunes, Google Play, Overcast, Spotify, all the popular podcast apps. Please go rate and review this podcast on iTunes. Tell your friends, spread the word, and we'll see you tomorrow.